Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, pod people, and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the show where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one did it better. And this week we're Star Trekking across the universe on the Starship Enterprise under Captain Kirk. Star Trekking across the universe, boldly going forward because we still can't find reverse.
You can't even guarantee the safety of your own crew. Now, shall we begin?
I'm sorry.
On Monday, we felt the wrath of Khan, meaning today we're feeling the wrath of John through Star Trek Into Darkness. But which is the logical winner? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Alex Garrett, man. I'm a doctor, not a torpedo technician.
Same.
And Vicky,
yeah.
Tell us why you've beamed us up this week.
Because I used to love Star Trek so very, very, very much. And I feel weird talking about it, to be honest, because I kept it hidden for quite a number of years.
It was quite a surprise when you revealed this
really?
Information.
Yeah.
Lovely surprise. Lovely surprise.
Thanks, Chris. It was such a big part of my life. And then once I was through it, I was just mortified. I was amazed at my own like naivety just to walk into my school being like, yeah, I'm in the Star Trek fan club. What of it? And then I tried to distance myself from it because I just felt embarrassed.
I think it makes you a lot cooler.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Alex.
Definitely.
I've never felt like that.
Well, you take it from me, kid.
So when,
you're cool.
Thanks, Dad.
Until that point where you stopped being into it,
yeah,
were you more Star Trek than Star Wars?
Oh my God, 100,000%.
Alex, what were you?
Star Wars.
Me too.
I just don't really give a shit about Star Wars. I'm sorry. Because I saw it really late
it's
as right. well.
Unfortunately, we didn't make them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be making this podcast every week.
That's true. Why are you in here?
You don't have to apologize.
Aren't you a billionaire? No, because I saw Star Wars when I was quite old as well. I avoided it for a long time. So I was about 19 the first time I saw Star Wars. And obviously, no nostalgia rush. The moment had very much passed.
Okay.
I look forward to hearing more about that on the Star Wars episode.
That's right. I do like the original Star Wars and obviously the others are dog shit. So that's fine.
Yeah, I've got a little bit on that. You'll enjoy what's coming up then.
Pod race, fuck off.
No, pod race, compared to the new ones, I could take a fucking pod race any day.
Would you?
And actually, the pod race is probably one of the best sequences in Phantom Menace. Still
well, yeah, bad. But
that
that's
and Duel
a low
of the
bar.
Fates, the lightsaber fight at the end.
Still an awful film. But we're not here to talk about that.
No, sorry.
It's no Rise of Skywalker. Which
it's less racist, though. I think Phantom Menace is a deeply racist film. We'll talk about it in the pub.
Okay.
But before we get into that and Star Trek, let's hear a review courtesy of you lovely people who have left them on iTunes. And this week's review comes courtesy of O-Town 69.
Can I ask a quick question? Is this the US review site you've started dipping into or the UK review site?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I just copy and paste them.
Great.
All right.
Jesus Christ. Never try and pull back the curtain. I can keep that curtain pulled. Don't let people know about what goes on behind the scenes.
I just can't remember.
All right, fine.
Did it?
It's not a big deal. Just say America. We could have done this.
America.
Fine.
O-Town 69 says it's time for the verdict and goes on to say new all-time favourite podcast. New episodes are always a treat, and I even occasionally pop an old one on if I just want some nice brain wallpaper as I go about my day. If you enjoy movies and or having a laugh alongside three great pod people, you've got to check it out. Wallpaper.
I'm like happy phrase, with that,
yeah. That's
fine.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Do you think they are an actual member of the band
O-Town? I did wonder. The 69th member.
Yeah.
a sexy thing?
They went through a lot in their time.
Oh, it's a good reference. All right. So on Monday, I took us.
I used to drink in a bar where the guy behind the bar was a member of the boy band Northern Line.
Really?
Do you remember Northern Line?
A little bit, yeah.
Since the boy band, he was bar manager. So, and there's nothing wrong with working in a bar.
Oh, it wasn't his pub?
No, but but yeah.
I'm glad he's alive. Some of those people die.
Everybody dies, Chris.
No, but
it's a really good point, Chris.
Yeah.
A really good point. Thank you.
Boy band's over, drugs, dead.
Right, sorry, I thought you just meant people.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, okay. Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, I brought it down.
Really, in a big way?
Okay. Should we talk about Star Trek?
Sure.
All right. On Monday, I took us into the future for some rap. Meaning today, Alex is taking us into a different future, courtesy of the Kelvin timeline, for some darkness. So, Big Al, please take us on a journey.
After Spock and Kirk have a fight about the Prime Directive, Kirk gets the Enterprise taken off him, but then immediately given back to him by RoboCop, because RoboCop hates Prime Directives as much as Kirk. RoboCop also hates Klingons and has a plan to, wait for it, bring back a 200-year-old genetically engineered superhuman called John, not Khan, okay? He's not Khan. John will design him weapons, then RoboCop will blackmail John, not Khan, with his still-frozen crew, forcing John to flee to Kronos, where RoboCop will then send the Enterprise to fire special torpedoes at John, torpedoes that also have enough room in them to fit other frozen superhumans, all of which will ignite a war. Turns out, surprise, John is actually Khan, meaning J.J. Abrams spent the entire marketing of this movie just lying at people. RoboCop's plan fails because Khan crushes his head, a female doctor gets undressed, Kirk dies but then immediately doesn't, and literally thousands die when a spaceship Spock blew up crashes into Earth the end. Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, Star Trek Into Darkness. That's my
that was good.
My little journey through what is a very, at times, overly complicated plot. So, histories with this movie. I'll start. I watched it once before this at an early screening, press screening, ahead of the London Leicester Square premiere for Star Trek Into Darkness, which I hosted. And today is one of the best stages ever built. They recreated a kind of mock-up of the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, this pristine white stage, and then there was an arch that you walked under, this huge arch on the carpet, which was actually the Starfleet insignia.
Oh, that's
a massive
nice
Starfleet insignia.
That's nice.
So that's when I saw it, and I've never watched it since. Vicky?
I watched it on the telly at some point and watched it once, and I enjoyed it. That's okay. It.
Chris?
I went through the hell of covering this film for 4 years while I was at IGN, and it was hard work navigating all the lies. I went on the IGN page for Star Trek Into Darkness, and you see every article. There's about 500 articles they've written about this film.
Why?
Because people are interested, and every week some new bit of news seemed to break, and I realised I'd written a lot more articles. I didn't think I'd written anything about this film.
That's great, because I really don't have much in the background of this movie.
But I literally had people lying to my face. I interviewed Damon Lindelof for Prometheus, and I mentioned Star Trek stuff, and he lied to me, and Benedict Cumberbatch lied to me, and the producer lied to me. Brian Burke, it's quite a strange experience, especially when everyone kind of knew what was happening. Early on in the process, they cast Benicio del Toro in this role, and so it's pretty obvious what direction they were going in. And even early on, J.J. Abrams was saying, yeah, we might do Khan, we'll probably do Khan, and then suddenly it all changed when they made this decision. And so, yeah, I went through a hellish time.
I mean, do you want to talk about this moment now? Because I've got...
Yeah,
I've
briefly.
I've got what J.J. Abrams said in the end about that whole thing.
What, looking back on it?
Yes.
Before we get there, I'll tell you about a couple of things. I asked Lindelof, who's the villain? And he said, are you insane? I'm not telling you that. He said, what we're introducing is a cool, nuanced force of antagonism that's very different. Not that different. Carl Urban said Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Gary Mitchell. That was a lie. Simon Pegg said it's not Khan. That was a lie. Cumberbatch, when I was asking him about it, he was just saying he's a terrorist, and he was saying he was giving that party line, which is fair enough. We want people to have surprises in the film. You know, we want to live in a world where you can, no one, not everyone knows everything going into a movie. I kind of understood that. Yeah, Brian Burke, the producer, he sort of said to me, I don't want to talk about him. It's like if I told you all about Darth Vader before Star Wars. Fair enough, but I've got the mistake quotes here, Alex, if you haven't.
Yeah, I can't find them. Go
yeah,
for it.
So here's what they both went on record after the fact. Lindelof said that was a mistake because the audience was like, we know he's playing Khan. That's why it was a mistake. And Abrams said, the truth is, I think it probably would have been smarter just to say up front, this is who it is. It was only trying to preserve the fun of it, and it might have given people more time to acclimate and accept that that was the thing. And I think that was the problem. Because the issue for me with this, keeping this secret, was that in Empire Strikes Back or Usual Suspects or Sixth Sense, the twist is devastating for the characters. And as a byproduct, it's devastating for the audience. But here it means nothing to the characters or anyone who hasn't watched a 30-year-old film or an even older TV episode. So what's the point? Mm. And you're sitting there waiting for it to happen and it takes an hour and it's distracting.
Mm. Yeah.
I want people to still be able to have surprise. I love a twist, but I just think...
It's not a twist.
They just mishandled it.
It's
not a twist.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly, and I think what pleased me is the fact that it did anger fans as well, because sometimes when you're doing the interviews and you are being lied to your face and you know because you're part of the film journalism sort of world, you think, is it just me? And actually, is what they're doing really beneficial for the audience out there when they see the movie? And it's not.
No.
And that's the thing, and people were like, we know as well. It's not just you journalists who know. Everyone fucking knows.
Filmmakers should be able to keep secrets. That's one of the things I love in movies, is being surprised. But with this, I just think this case, it just did not work.
Yeah, but I think
they ended up pissing off their own fans.
Exactly. But I think that's different. I think filmmakers, if it's a surprise, there's no need to keep it a secret because it's so unexpected in the film. No one could guess it beforehand. I mean, there's a difference between a twist that people reveal afterwards, like spoilers. That's not what I'm talking about. But the idea of a surprise in a movie, like you, as the journalist, you would never guess that surprise in the first place because it is a surprise. Mm. It's like bloody Blofeld as well. Christoph Waltz going, I'm not Blofeld.
Mm.
And you're like, okay, are we doing this? I'm not Blofeld. I don't know what you've heard.
Did you not see what happened with Star Trek just now?
Like, are we doing this dance again? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a little bit about the movie, and I'm sure you've got some more for me, Chris, because I've only got a little. I'll do it right now.
You've literally got all I've got. That was it.
First movie made money. People loved it. They decided to make a sequel. Done.
Quite
That's
right.
Pretty much
all right.
It. No, I've got some more.
Okay.
I've got some more. So the first movie was the highest grossing Star Trek movie ever, the seventh highest grossing movie that year. Paramount were very happy that it did so well overseas, because Star Trek previously, apparently the original movies, had never really travelled as well as this new one. So obviously, international markets. The same team behind the original movie, Robert Orci, Alex Kurtzman, and this time a credited Damon Lindelof, were writing, and J.J. Abrams directing. I do remember at the time there was a lot of this on again, off again about whether Abrams would actually direct this or just produce it, which at the time I remember being quite a big deal, because at that time Abrams like had the Midas touch. It was like everything he'd done was amazing. MI3, the first Star Trek, created Fringe, Lost. Mm. People loved Super 8. I personally didn't think Super 8 was very good, but it wasn't bad. But now, Star Wars, I think that's changed a little bit. It's not like the Midas touch anymore because of the fucking Rise of Skywalker. Anyway, in the end, he does it. Rumours that Shatner might be in the film. Although J.J. Abrams said he's often struggled with how to work around dealing with Kirk's death, which obviously happens in Generations, which we were talking about on Monday, and that was one of the hindrances of including him in the new Star Trek. The Shat himself said, I don't think that J.J. Abrams knows what to do with me. Age, change in body shape.
He's fucking obsessed.
Well, he is.
Yeah. Famously.
Yeah.
So Chris mentioned it. Benicio del Toro was going to be Khan for a bit and then dropped out. Other people, Edgar Ramirez, Damien Bichir, and Jordi Moller, who I thought would have been good. He played the bad guy, Hector Tapia. Hector Johnny Tapia in Bad Boys 2.
Oh, right.
I quite like him. But it was Steven Spielberg who suggested that they take a look at Benedict Cumberbatch. He just appeared in War Horse for Spielberg. Here, Benedict Cumberbatch famously filmed an audition on his iPhone, and they were like, yes, please, we want you Cumberbatch. Other than that, it was a big success and became... It eclipsed the original movie by about 100 million.
Wow.
So this is, to date, the highest grossing Star Trek movie ever, with $467 million around the world. Any more for any more?
Yeah, just one quote that made me laugh. This Abrams was talking to Crave, a website called Crave, about reactions to this film. And he said he showed his wife an early cut of Into Darkness and she told him she couldn't understand what was happening because of all the lens flare.
Yes, fuck me.
He had to have ILM take some out.
But there's a lot in it. There's a lot.
And this is stuff that's been cut because of his wife.
But I like lens flare now because it reminds me of this franchise of films so much, because the first one is chock full of lens flare. This one has got tons of it. And I think, what's the other one called?
Beyond,
yeah. There's plenty of it in there. I like it because it makes me feel nostalgia for this.
There is one amazing goosebump scene in Beyond, which is where they play the Beastie Boys Sabotage.
Are you fucking joking? I think about it all the time. It's the worst writing
I can think of. Brilliant.
An arbitrary marker that makes fucking no sense is the thing that gets you out of conflict. Bullshit.
Oh, my God. I'm not talking about, like, structurally whether it works in the script. I'm talking about playing Beastie Boys Sabotage in a Star Trek movie while the ship flies through a swarm of other ships, blowing the shit out of them, and then does that arc backwards in space while it's blazing
the
trail behind
it. Fast and Furious has a lot to answer for.
It's just, I get really mad about it because they're such a highly paid team.
You mean?
You can do better.
Fine. Yeah, I mean, the whole setup to that where it's like, you know...
Oh, this thing just happens to work.
Yeah, so we need to use this frequency.
It's a song, the frequency. Yeah, it could be anything in the world.
Yeah, but the final line, I think, is Kirk's, where he goes, I think I've got an idea. And you're like, oh my God, Goosebumps! Beast Boy Sabotage in space! The Star Trek movie! What? But there was a huge... There were massive loads and loads of people. There was a huge backlash because they used it in the trailer. The first trailer that dropped was set to that. And obviously everyone went, the fuck?
Yeah.
And I think Simon Pegg even came out and went, that was not the trailer we wanted to promote this new movie.
Yeah.
You know, because then people and the filmmakers are often not in charge of the trailers, so it wasn't their decision. But I don't know.
We're not here to talk about that. Come on.
She brought it up.
You brought it up.
No, I did, yep. You're absolutely right. So, are you ready for what was originally conceived as a retelling of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness?
It was not.
Yeah. Isn't everything.
That's been done.
Kurtzman and Orsi. Now, I'm calling him Orsi. I know you pronounce it Orki, but I did a pronunciation thing, which are often wrong.
Sure.
And
no, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Orsi. But it might be Orki.
Apologies. No, Orsi sounds good. Orsi's right. Orsi's correct. Go.
So, the whole theme is how far will we go to exact vengeance and justice on an enemy that scares us?
Complicatedly far.
Way too complicatedly far.
Lots of plot holes when you think about it.
Well, I'm going to point them all out. So I do remember seeing this opening at the cinema and I absolutely loved it. Your classic pre-titles, action tease, Bond-esque, or in this instance, obviously Raiders of the Lost Ark inspired, chased by the native people because you've stolen an artifact. This was not going to be the start of the movie, though. The original start of the movie was going to start with the couple in London with their sick kid.
Aww.
Because the writers were like, we want to start with some big emotion, and they were going to start with that, and then they thought, no.
That's not what people want.
The real emotion here is Kirk and Spock, so let's start with their emotional connection, because that's going to be a theme for the movie, is it? It's not. It really is loose. And so that's why we get this really fun sequence with the Enterprise underwater.
I love it. I love all of it. I mean, I love J.J. Abrams always making these characters fucking jump. They don't stop jumping. They've got to do so much jumping. But it's just, it's modern eyes, because there's nothing wrong with The Wrath of Khan. But when you just, you know, you're just like, thank God, like just so much action. And it hasn't had a chance to be spoiled by something equivalent to the Beastie Boys thing. There are things later on with the plot holes. You're like, if you pay too much attention, you're like, oh, it's annoying. But in terms of the action, as you know, your first 5 minutes, you're just like, this is brilliant.
Well, that's what this skates. That's what this film skates by on, and does it very well, which is it never letting you breathe.
Yeah.
And there's a quote from JJ, which I'll bring up in a bit, which he acknowledges the fact that if you pick at this, it unravels very quickly.
Yes.
So they're not supposed to violate the Prime Directive.
No, that's their one rule, really.
So are they supposed to let these people die rather than interfere?
Yes. That's the whole thing of Star Trek.
It's very David Attenborough, isn't it? Letting those animals die rather than step in and help.
Or killing them himself.
As we talked about this on Monday. Yeah.
Yeah. That new show we're pitching. Fucking Attenborough.
Two exclamation marks.
David Attenborough and an animal enter. Only one will leave. Welcome to fucking Attenborough! Fireworks. The arena is open. What animal will enter today?
I'm with Kirk here. I would have saved those Indigenous people.
I wouldn't.
Just let them have a glimpse. Let them have a glimpse.
No.
What's the worst that can happen?
But you're playing God. You're screwing up the universe. Who knows?
I'm not playing God. I'm helping people.
In a millennium, they might develop something that changes the course of the universe in a way that would never have been changed if you had let them die.
Why is helping people playing God?
Because you should not be part of their universe. It's only because you're more advanced that you are even there.
Yeah. You can play God within your own moral framework because we have these societal rules that say, so like, I would say it's about the advanced technology, but if you were ill and you went to a hospital and they said, we've got this cool advanced technology that can save your life, you're part of this society, so it's taken as given that you agree to that, but we don't understand these aliens' moral codes and mores and compass, so you're not allowed to just bosh in there and save their life.
For example, the movie even spells it out. When they're drawing an outline of the Enterprise in a stick, so what happens in that community? Some of the community go, we're worshipping this as the new god. And the others go, well, we're not. And suddenly they're killing each other because they saw this spaceship, which would never have happened if you haven't violated the Prime Directive.
I help them. Moving on.
Oh, that almost feels like a scene in this movie. Massive monologue. But are you going to do it anyway? Yeah.
Moving on.
They said that because they were aware that it was going to piss off Star Trek fans having a ship underwater, they had a massive debate about it, which led to a lot of the funny lines where Scott is going, but that's ridiculous.
Oh, I'm a massive Star Trek fan. I loved it.
I did too.
Yeah, it's a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think playing in sort of a sand pit that has devout fans of any kind, you are sort of second guessing yourself sometimes. So it's a fun beginning. We get a reintroduction of all the characters done very efficiently. Kirk, Reckless, Logical Spock, and the other ones. I do like the new cast in these new movies. I think Zoe Saldana's great. I love Carl Urban as Bones, but then I have blindness.
You do. You're in love with him.
I do. I am in love with him. I'm going to say it up front. I'm not a fan of Zachary Quinto's Spock.
Now, interesting.
Largely, I think that's because huge shoes to fill. Mm. But also, I find him quite angry all the time. He seems constantly irritated because of his intellect by everyone else.
Yeah, that's true.
And
Leonard Nimoy's quite a calm presence,
very passive,
isn't he?
Sort of almost like, if anything, a bit patronising, but a little bit sort of like slightly amused by all these conversations that are happening. Whereas, like, Quinto's Spock is a bit like, oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah. I think it's a mark of the way he plays that character. I'll jump in ahead slightly, but just because you mentioned it, when he gives that big speech about, I do care, but I chose not to in that moment when I was on the volcano, you think, no, that's not true. Like, you still sound like you're talking to your girlfriend. You're like, no, it's not that I don't give a shit. Mm. It's that I really give a shit. And you think, bollocks. Like, that did not convince me one bit.
So shall I see you at your cabin at 8?
It totally works. She's like, oh, okay.
I know, really.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, this movie creates problems and then solves them very quickly.
Yep.
Like, throughout the whole thing.
Well, sure, you said before, it gets the Enterprise is no longer yours, son. In 10 minutes it will be.
In 10 minutes it will be.
You learn nothing.
Kirk's dead. No, I didn't finish the sentence. He's back. He is back. It's so silly. So we obviously get the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few line used in Wrath of Khan. Nicholas Meyer describes this as, just by putting the same words in different characters' mouths doesn't add up to anything in this film. He's not a fan of Into Darkness. So the big takeaway plot point is Kirk broke the Prime Directive. We're off to future London. A couple's terminally ill kid is dying, but fear not.
Doctor Strange can save her.
I mean, it's the best bit. Right, two things. A nod to... God, this is so... My memory's going. What's the film we did with Arnie the other week?
Commando. No. Running Man.
Running Man. You know, we were talking about futuristic hard hats. It's like, how could a hard hat be improved? Because it perfectly encases a human skull, but it can be in the future.
Yep.
Noel Clark's got a futuristic hat on. It's like, hats have changed. And then also they've got a hospital. It's like, welcome to the future. Stretchers don't have wheels, but you do still need to push them. What's the point? Oh, brilliant. The future looks rubbish.
Oh, yeah. Well, a shadowy figure says I can save her.
Doctor Strange.
Who are you? Mm. Silence. No, really, it's really important because this seems quite risky.
Nothing bad will happen from doing this deal with you. But before we can find out how that plays out, we're back at Starfleet and Kirk has the Enterprise taken off him because Spock dobbed him in about breaking the rules. We've already covered like the fact that he gets it back in a moment. J.J. Abrams says, and I'll mention it now because it applies to a lot of this movie. I feel like, in a weird way, this is him looking back retrospectively at this film. I feel like, in a weird way, this film's a little bit of a collection of scenes that were written by my friends, brilliantly talented writers, who I somehow misled into trying certain things. I found myself frustrated by my choices and unable to hang my hat on an undeniable thread of the main story.
That's very honest.
It is. And I think it's true. Yeah, because taken independently, certain scenes are great, but sort of finding that emotional core of like this relationship of Kirk and Spock, you were left wanting by the end.
Yeah. Well, I've got another quote from him. He says that that relationship is a bit muddy. Mm. What was their issue? What was their dynamic? What was their problem? It wasn't really clear. That's literally your job as the writer. He said it was a little bit lightweight, ultimately, that Kirk was disappointed that Spock didn't feel their friendship was as meaningful to him as it was to Kirk, which is sort of what we're saying. And that Spock's arc is coming to unabashedly love his friend. It's just two mates going, oh, I like you, don't like you. Like,
yeah, it really is.
It's just nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and do you know what? I will add to that. The other thing is, it feels earned in The Wrath of Khan because Spock and Kirk, Nimoy and Shatner, have done the TV series together. Yeah. They've been together
you've got that
for
legacy.
So long. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like you're watching two people who really have been on a journey. These guys have one movie under the belt.
Well, then, yeah, they've not known each other.
They've not been tested. They've
terribly
not been
long.
Through much.
And they didn't like each other for the duration of the first film.
Yeah.
And for most of this film, they don't like each other very much. So there's not a friendship there.
No. Mm. Exactly. So I do like us visiting a dive bar.
Did you notice the big ice? I thought of you.
Yes. Oh, my God. I loved it when it clinks into the glass.
Do you like big ice?
I love big ice. Nettie said the same thing. She was like, I love ice cubes like that.
Yeah, me too.
So good.
Can I buy you the tray? I don't know we've done this.
Have you got one?
A big ice tray? Yeah, 100%.
Oh,
do you want one?
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
I've got Death Star ice cube.
Yeah, perfect for whiskey.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
This is amazing.
Okay.
So we're all agreed. Well, that's why we're friends.
I wonder if it says on Google if there's a pub near here that does big ice cubes. Yeah. I'd put that front and centre on my website. I would. That's great. So we're in a dive bar. So Dad Mark II for Kirk turns up in the form of Bruce Greenwood's Admiral Pike to give a fatherly speech and say son a lot in a way that makes you know he's a walking corpse at this point.
I've done a good thing for you, son.
I'm frigid myself.
Yeah.
let's play the movies game. So it's time to assemble Starfleet Command to deal with the terrorist, John. Because, sure enough, John only blows up the lab to assemble the Starfleet Command in one room and then kill them in what is a fun action sequence.
Yeah. How about, though, when Kurt's like, oh, we're all in one room. How about you have that meeting in a room with no windows? That's my thought.
A bunker, maybe. A military bunker. This is all of them.
Yeah.
This is everyone.
We used to do that in our century. The White House, the bunker is very much underground. You're in this basically like
you're on
atrium.
The lawn. You're on the white. It's the equivalent of on the White House lawn and going, security, take a day off. Yeah, we're fine
we're
here.
We're fine.
So this helicopter threat you've been talking about. Yeah, so obviously, John, desperately needing to find out from Admiral Marcus where his frozen superhuman buddies are, decides to open fire on a room with Admiral Marcus in.
Yeah, perfect.
Smart superhuman ability.
My super intellect.
Yeah. Kirk loses Dad Mark 2. Spock, in what I consider a massive invasion of privacy,
no consent was given.
Mind melds with Admiral Pike as he's dying to share his death.
Yeah, he does look angry about it though.
He does. He's like, his eyes are like,
this is private.
Fuck off.
is that not some kind of prime directive he's breaking and violating there?
Until it's written down, it doesn't apply to me. Yeah, it's shocking.
Yeah, it is.
Because he even says to Kirk, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I went in there.
I did that. It was awful. Lonely, angry,
what, did he want you to?
Sad.
I don't know, I didn't check. Yeah. What, do you always check? Don't be weird. It kills the moment, I found.
No means no, Spock. So, Kirk gets Dad Mark III in the form of Peter Weller's Admiral Marcus. God love Peter Weller. Oh, brilliant.
Does his voice sound metallic to you?
It's RoboCop.
It's not his fault, but would I have thought his voice was metallic if I hadn't seen it? Probably not. But it's just, I just hear metal in his words.
Yeah.
So he comes up with a plan about parking on the edge of the neutral zone and firing his new special photon torpedoes at the Klingon homeworld Kronos, where John is hiding. Did you see the massive models in front of him, first of all?
I did.
Did you see the USS Vengeance, the ship that turns up at the end? It's a little foreshadowing of the baddie's ship, the big bad at the end.
Oh, is that like a public model? Can anyone see
that? Exactly.
I thought it was a secret.
Yep. Again, what a ridiculous thing to do.
Yeah,
what's that model?
That.
Nothing. Pushes
that
it into
like
a bin.
Very militaristic. No, we don't do that, do we? We're all about exploring.
That looks like it could work with a minimal crew. Your words, not mine. So I've always respected Starfleet because they work under some sort of democracy. The people up top seem very wise, and everything's done democratically. People vote, and it's all about perpetuating the peace.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the sort of Starfleet council when he's going, this is the plan, off you pop?
I think that's always read that as like all the characters are playing a game. It's like, you know that this is not quite right, and I know that you know, but I know you don't care.
Right.
That's what I thought. Because they have to have a big meeting about everything in Star Trek.
Which is the nice thing about it.
He's seen an opportunity, isn't he? Because I think some of the higher ups are dead. He knows that Kirk wants to go on this vendetta, and he's got this now opportunity. He can have Kirk fire the torpedoes at the Klingons. He can get rid of the evidence and he can start a war. So the wheels are turning and he thinks on his feet and gets
I get that.
But the plot hole is, if Harrison is not friends with Marcus, why is he hiding in the one place where Marcus can then start his war from? He could go anywhere, but he goes to Kronos. So by being in Kronos, it's like, oh, there's an opportunity to start a war. But if he'd just gone anywhere else, that's it over with.
Also, a bigger problem is that this would work if he went, Kirk, can I see you in my office? And they do it privately. Mm. They're literally standing next to the meeting table with the rest of the Starfleet people.
That's true.
And like shouting it out loud. Yeah, so Kronos! Yeah! Missile! Yeah! And then Spock and Kirk, when they're walking off, and Spock's going, this plan about the missiles and Kronos, in public, this secret plan is illegal! It doesn't make any sense. So we're in the future. A future where you've got to assume that people shouldn't be able to trick their way onto a starship by changing their surname. Weird.
I'm being pretty. Don't be ridiculous. Because all that has to happen here, because there is no chemistry, is she just needs to come into his view, and then it's like, oh, well, here we go. Well, now we're going to be in a relationship. She's got grey hair. We're talking about Alice Eve as Carol Wallace, and then later Marcus.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's unreal. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm absolutely fine. I can be here. But they're like, well, you're gorgeous, so sit yourself down. That's it.
Yeah. Scotty's not a fan of her or the torpedoes.
No. This is clearly a military operation.
Go.
I thought we were scientists.
Play Simon Pegg when you need him.
The trouble is, I'm not to be mean on Simon Pegg, but just this is not his fault. All my love of Star Trek is really wound up in my granddad. My granddad was really Scottish, and my granny and granddad love Scottish. They were like, represent. And so when you get Simon Pegg, being like, I can have a fucking crack at that. It feels like a family insult.
But we sometimes talk about where names come from. Why do you think they called him Scotty? But that military scientist line is the callback to David's line in Wrath of Khan. Scientists have always been the pawns of the military. It's what Maya's saying. It's taking a line, putting it in someone's mouth.
Yeah.
Someone else's mouth. Chekhov is told to put on a red shirt. I thought that was quite funny, the look on his face.
Yeah. That's good.
Good red shirt gag.
Is there no one else? Because also engineering is big. It's got a big staff, big crew. And he's like, you, boy that flies the ship, you've seen how the engine works, haven't you? He's like, well, I've walked past it once or twice.
What
it's
about
yours.
All these other people who are...
What about the
Scottish? Scottish again.
It started well. Scotty flipping resigns. He goes... And he goes, his line is, I'm going, if you don't fire those torpedoes at that, at Kronos.
It's good.
All right. Anyway, those are his parting words.
Yes.
And again, the captain is like, fuck off, get off my ship. And then in the next scene goes, actually, we're not going to fire those at Kronos. I'm going to beam down. It's like,
get him back.
You should have done that while Scotty was going. It's like, I'm going to resign, Captain.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Is he not doing? Is he not changing his mind because of what Scotty said?
Yeah,
to him?
I guess a little bit, but at the same time, it's sort
of to defend it a little bit.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a funny old arc Scotty's got.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Pops up in places that it just a bit too convenient.
Yeah, it needs him to be doing certain things at certain times, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah. Mm.
So Kirk leaves Sulu in charge, and we get one of my favourite bones and necessary metaphors in the series. You just sat that man down in a high-stakes poker game with no cards and asked him to bluff.
It's laboured.
To which Kirk does actually say enough with the metaphors, that's an order.
It's quite funny.
Self-aware. Good. So they're off to Kronos. Keep some fun bickering on the way down. A spaceship chase. It's okay. I feel like I've seen this exact conceit before. We won't fit. We will. We won't.
Oh my God, we have seen that a million times before.
Well, it's a bit like the Millennium Falcon in the Death Star in Return of the Jedi, where it's like, well, running out of space.
And Independence Day. That's where it is at the end of that.
Exactly. We meet some new Klingons. Anyone really interested in the fact that it's a new Klingon design?
A little bit.
It was sort of interesting at the time. I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't have any strong opinions.
It doesn't go anywhere, does it? You introduce the Klingons and then you essentially fridge them, and it's super annoying. I mean, this scene does give Uhura something to do because she can speak to, because otherwise in this film she's just angry girlfriend.
No, because she does get orders, which is open the channel. So she goes, done, presses a button. That's your whole, you went to the academy for what, 8 years to go beep.
Well, no, they give her something to do here. She translates and she's, you know, goes toe-to-toe with the Klingons.
But I understand that, because it does go to great lengths to give every crewmate their moment. Unfortunately, Uhura's moment actually involves the lines that you, as an actor, you must like, oh, really?
Fuck, am I really?
She actually says the words, "You brought me here because I speak Klingon. Then let me speak Klingon."
And the music's like, da-na-na-na, and you're supposed to go, oh my God. But it's like, what a shit line.
I'm here to speak Klingon, and I'm gonna speak Klingon.
It's just ridiculous. You're here to let me save the day, so let me, like, anything.
Which, you'd go, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
If it worked, it doesn't even work.
No.
It doesn't work. She goes, clap, 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 clap. And then they go, fuck you. Just like, after that big stand.
And also there's no opportunity to go, you know, they, especially in the older shows, they had a bit of an issue with women. So there's no moment where she goes, oh, they'll respect me as a woman because insert reason here. She's like, I'll just chance it, see what happens. It's like, probably not. It's not going to go very well. Annoying.
Yeah. John turns up with his ridiculously big gun. I really like that gun. It's so stupidly big. And kicks the shit out of everyone. And then is about to beat Kirk. And then Kirk goes, I've got torpedoes. And he goes, how many torpedoes? 72. Oh, okay, I surrender.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, it's all right. I don't mind it.
I like Kirk exhausting himself, punching Harrison.
That's quite good.
I enjoy that. But Harrison doing the sort of rope-a-dope. And yeah, it's just, you know, if we didn't know who this man was, we'd be wondering.
Yeah.
Who is this Superman? This genetically engineered specimen.
Yeah. Anyway.
I just think as well, I know it's dumb. It's just the plot point of like your Admiral Captain, what's he called? The big boss man Marcus. Not Carol Marcus. And you've got these torpedoes and you've stuffed some bodies in there
as well.
Right, yep. So you're trying to kill two birds with one stone when really you should be concentrating on one thing at a time. So you don't put those torpedoes in the path of the one man who wants the bodies inside them, because you've got the advanced technology is that they're undetectable, not that they've got bodies in, and the body parts don't make them what they are. So you can have advanced torpedo. What he's done is gone, I've got an advanced torpedo and it also fits a body in.
I mean, you got to respect his efficiency.
Sure.
He's like,
but it fucks him.
He's looking at the budget.
Yeah.
He's looking at the bottom line.
Yeah.
I have to get a furnace lit up to burn these bodies when I could use the furnace these torpedoes will create. I'm fucking, that's why I got to the top.
Yeah, he's a
they
fool.
Don't call me Admiral for nothing. So John's captured. Alice Eve takes her kit off.
I fucking hate this so much.
You're not alone. Everyone hated this.
It's so, I don't want to think that J.J. Abrams is a bad guy. I just don't want to, because I like all of the things he does. But this is obvious, but this is a director going, look at this hot girl for 2 seconds.
Yeah. You got the Lindelof quote.
Yeah, I've got the Lindelof quote. The film was criticised for a scene where she takes a kit off, which was called by various sources wholly unnecessary and gratuitous. Screenwriter and producer Damon Lindelof apologised on Twitter for the scene. I take responsibility and will be more mindful in future. J.J. Abrams also did a weird thing on an episode of Conan where he was trying to sort of, like, justify it in a strange way where he was like, there was a scene, a deleted scene of Benedict Cumberbatch in a shower. And I thought they were going to do a joke, but it's actually a real scene that they cut out of him in the shower and they play it. But the setup is them re-showing, and it's not Abrams, it's Conan, re-showing the still of Alice Eve in her underwear. Mm. And then you sort of realise that they've talked themselves into this corner where it's a bunch of guys showing a still of a woman in her underwear that already caused people to put their backs up. And then Conan's like, better take that down, sort of wanting to joke about it, but be the sleazy guy and go, oh, hello,
but,
all right.
Yeah, but
it's
using that
messy.
Using that Cumberbatch scene...
His fans.
Using that Cumberbatch scene as an example, even though it's not in the film. And they also used the scene earlier in the film where Kirk has his shirt off as an example of why they did this here. But Kirk's having a threesome. She's at work. Yeah. That's quite a big difference.
And she said turn around. So you're with, that's your man. He's your hero.
Yeah, and he's copping a and look.
He's copping a look, which is not a good look for him. Mm. But also she's just said turn around. He's cheeky. The scene is meant, you're meant to go, oh, he's a bit naughty.
That's right.
And because he's broken her rule, she loves it. So because she loves it, they're going to get together because she told him expressly to turn around and he didn't. And all of these layers are awful. But really what you've got is the director going, okay, action, take your clothes off for no reason. So
Lindelof said we should have done a better job of not being gratuitous in our representation of barely clothed actress.
As the highest paid writing team in the world at that point, I think, do a bit of work to make their relationship seem natural and organic rather than he saw your boobs and now you're together. I fucking hate it.
I mean, you've already said it. I mean, Abraham said it was, you know, it was playing on Kirk's character. The Kirk we know is the womanizer. That's why they did it. That's why he turns around. The problem I have is, like, you can argue all you want the ins and outs of character and what have you, and it's about the relationship. It's the way it's shot.
Yes, it is.
It's shot from a low angle to get as much of her body in as possible, and at that point you go, oh, fuck you, you can't justify
You're completely
this.
Right. There's a way of doing it where he looks over his shoulder and you see that he's seen something and you think, okay, that's, you know,
but
not the end of the world.
Don't forget, it was a different time.
It was 2013.
No, it was in the future.
Oh, that's true. No, nothing has changed. That's even more depressing. Nothing has changed.
So, after Carol Marcus has put her clothes back on, we get an exposition dump, which is way too much info. Her father, Admiral Marcus, used to take her to see all the new weaponry he was designing, and she found out that he was developing these torpedoes and she has to see them. And he said, no, you can't see these ones. And then she realised that all the information on them has been destroyed. I'm like, oh, God.
Annoying.
That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
And there'll be more after the break.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so while all this is going on, Scotty flies through the main door at a secret base he's found, unchecked, in a shuttle. Yeah. He just joins a queue of other shuttles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, fine. More confused exposition. What did you think of the big Khan speech? You know, where he actually goes... Yeah.
This is a hard one for me because I think it changes. I think I'm a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch. I think I am.
Yeah.
But then I see early Cumberbatch like this and I think, oh, that is annoying. Like a little bit. But I love, you know, I do love him and I think he's a good baddie. He's blank and he's intense and scary. But when he's like, I am Khan and I'm so amazing, you're just like, oh God, dude, give it a rest.
It's weird, isn't it? I think, because I remember seeing this and going, thank God for Benedict Cumberbatch in it. And then I think he's just got better and better. Because you watch The Power of the Dog now and he's a phenomenon.
Of course.
And at the time I watched this, I thought he was a phenomenon. But watching it this time, having seen what he can do now, I think, you know, he was the best he was then. But the bit where he goes, Chris Pine goes, what's your name? And he goes, you're like,
he doesn't do that.
Just the way he says it, it's like everyone's gone, this is the moment, Benedict.
Yep, this is
where we actually reveal your identity that no one knows. Say your name.
I think he makes a great villain here. I think I really love this performance and I'm so relieved we finally, 67 minutes in, we finally got the truth so we can get on with the movie.
Yeah, fine. So it's just what he's saying here. It's such nonsense. They were created to create peace in a violent time and then they were condemned. No explanation for why they were condemned as criminals, by the way. They were just suddenly condemned as criminals and then they either decided to go off into space or were put into space, but they chose to go to sleep, hoping they'd wake up in a more civilized time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, were they on timers?
I think the problem is though, with Ricardo Montalban, you get this. He's a bit of a prick because he's like, I'm so clever, but he's got the, you know, his blood runs hot. He's like, I would do this because of passion and because of love. And Khan, Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan, is like a cold, emotionless robot. So when he says to Kirk at some point, they're my family, you'd do anything for your family, everyone's supposed to go, well, of course you would. But it's like, I don't see you having any connection to anybody apart from yourself. So that's fine as a villain, but do you really give a shit about these other 72
people? It's weird, isn't it? How are you, Khan? Fine. How are you?
I'm all right.
I really missed you.
Right, can I go back to sleep?
They're his friends, Vicky.
I know, but you don't believe he has friends because he seems so emotionless, no?
I mean, they're not the sort of, if he said, do you want to come out with me and my mates? I'd be like, I'm so busy. I didn't give you the date. But also, okay, what date is it? I'm busy.
Yep, sorry.
But they're his family. You've got to think, I think they're all probably like him. And it's not only that he wants them back. He's telling him he wants them back because they're his friends, but he also wants to take over the universe.
Sure.
And he does it. He's going to do it with them. So he's not, I don't think he's entirely telling the truth here either.
Okay.
This is his crew to get his mission done.
Mm. I found the speech long and confusing and I wasn't sure what I was meant to take from it. Are we sympathetic towards Khan or is Khan like big bad number one?
Because he hasn't been that bad. He's done some blowing up stuff, but there's been the nuance. Like you're supposed to think, maybe there was it's bad.
He's murdered a room of people.
He's murdered a room of people, I know, but you're being told, I did this for a higher purpose.
Yes.
So you're like, okay.
We're definitely sympathetic towards him here.
I'm not sure if we are, though, because as Vicky just said, already at this point, you know that he wants his crew to take over the universe. Like, you know he's
no,
pretty...
No, he's not revealed that yet.
Okay.
You're jumping ahead.
Right, I am. Let's jump ahead to an actual great moment where the USS Vengeance turns up. Fucking love this ship. This, you know, I get excited for, like, new stuff in a pre-existing world and in the whole of the Star Trek universe, two things. One I'm going to mention in a moment. First, we've never seen a ship like this. It's there is a Federation ship.
It just means nothing to me. Oh, it's like cars in Fast and Furious. Spaceships and stuff. It's just like, they all look the same.
I got a bit weird when they're like, this is a pure military ship. And you're like, oh, okay, because they don't do that. Like, they go on 5-year missions and they put creatures in boxes.
It's the anti-Roddenberry.
Like, in the Next Generation, they're like, we've got a brig. We never hope to use it because it's not that kind of place. And then he's like, minimal crew. It's fucking black anyway. Brilliant. Yeah. And the bridge is like the mirror opposite of the negative opposite of the Enterprise.
I'd appreciated it more.
Oh, man, it's so cool. It's like, it's camouflaged against space because it's black.
Cool.
And it's just the size of it, that shot of it floating in front of the Enterprise. And you always thought of the Enterprise as the biggest thing you'd seen, bar a couple of other ships. But like that, just like boom. It's the noise it makes as well. It's so sexy. I love it. Peter Weller, now full villain.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Mm. Dad Mark III has gone bad. Well, shit, you talk to him. He gets the only swear in the movie. He's playing you, son.
But it's like, you haven't got all your little ducks in a row, Marcus. Of course I fucking talk to him. Don't put me in his path.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Kirk holds all the cards at this point. He's like, but of course you knew that. I don't know what you... Just don't even try.
But he was... I mean, he didn't purposely put him in his path. He thought Kirk was going to blow him to smithereens.
Yeah, that's true.
He thought he was going to explode him, so he wasn't expecting him to be
that's
on that
true.
Ship with
that's
him.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fine.
You're making me really over having to really think about this plot, and I don't want to think about it this hard.
But this is the point. Because this is all plot and no character. This entire movie is like one of those movies where it's just like, and this MacGuffin thing happens, and mm-hmm. then and this. I think it was Lindelof or Alex Kurtzman. One of them said, the thing about writing a big tentpole blockbuster is you need a big moment every 10 or 15 minutes. An operatic moment was the phrase they used, which this movie does. It's got something big at every moment. Like every 10, 15 minutes, something big happens. The problem is that it wants the moment, but the moment doesn't fit with the story. And so it has the moment and then it undoes the moment, which then makes the moment seem so superficial in the first place and carry no weight. It's like, oh. So you're constantly up and down, but the ups become worthless as it goes on, is my theory. So we get the second cool moment I was just going to mention. This ship can do shit in warp. That sound where it's like... when it arrives next to the Enterprise, it starts blasting the shit out of it, and the Enterprise cartwheels out of warp. Yeah. I was like... Oh, this is what I paid my money for.
Yeah, I like it when, because you don't see it, because the Next Generation is very sanitized when it comes to violence, necessarily. This is a family show. So you don't really ever see, well, I can't remember a time when there's a hull breach, they're like, there's a breach in the hull, nothing happens. And this body's in space, and it's like, oh, it's like, it seems real. It seems like a ship at sea. And I like moments like that.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Because it blows, like, it's the one space battle where I'm like, the Enterprise has had the shit blown out of it. It's like in pieces, and that guy gets hit by some debris.
Yeah, and you're falling down.
He's hanging on, gets sucked into the warp. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. This is what JJ does. He delivers bang on action. Do you know what I think it's similar to? Because again, like I said, with this, it's like he plays within the rules of the Star Trek universe, but does something we haven't seen. And it's not as good as this, but I equate it to the bit in The Last Jedi where... Laura Dern's character goes to light speed through the other ship and destroys it, and you've never seen that.
Yeah.
But it's within the rules of the universe, like this is. So we get arguably the MVW of the whole thing. I'm going early, which is when Kirk is on the bridge and he says, "What's the damage?" And a character we've never seen before, who is bald with glowing blue eyes, speaks in this voice and says, "The hull's bridge, Captain." Where's he been?
Yeah, they must not have been able to afford it, but then that's not true.
He's so good.
He's really good. He gets another moment later. I can't remember what it is.
Does he?
Yeah, he gets one more line. I was like, oh, here he is.
Major hull damage, Captain.
Yeah, he's really good.
Fucking like, he's like speaking with 1,000 voices at once. He's so good. So... two Federation starships have a massive space battle 237 kilometres from Earth that goes undetected by Earth, despite them being closer than the moon. Mental. Fine.
What is they're not as big as the moon, though.
No, but it's still like, we're aware of what's going on.
For our own safety, more than anything.
Where's Starfleet? Admiral Marcus has got this. Yeah, seems to be blowing up the Enterprise. He's got a plan. Dr. Marcus gets her moment pleading with her dad, only for him to beam her aboard the ship. How did they not know? That's something that any starship can do. That is not new to this movie.
She looks so freaked out about
it. She's never been beamed anywhere.
No.
She's like, she tries to run away from the beam.
It was, she does. It's stupid. Something bad was happening. I was like, oh, it's not a normal beam. Right. It's like chopping her into bits.
But don't you have to be in a special location to beam normally?
No.
Okay.
No, you can beam someone off. I'm sure you can. I mean, we're getting into the...
There used to be a room that they would beam in.
I think that's their preferred location because it's safer.
Yeah.
But I think you can do it on the flight. And I think, isn't that the plot of Generations that you can go through the Nexus?
The Nexus, yeah. Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, shut up. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So Kirk goes to see Khan. And he's like, help me. And this conversation gets interrupted by Bones operating on a tribble because Khan's cells regenerate at an incredible rate and I want to know why.
Mm.
Kirk listens to him say that and then turns back to Khan and just sort of ignores everything Bones has said and goes, so what I was saying was, are you going to come with me? And you watch that scene, you go, was there nowhere else to put the tribble bit? So you just literally landed it in the middle of a scene that no one makes any reference to.
Or you don't do the tribble bit and you trust that your audience will remember that his blood at the start of the film saved that girl.
I wonder why you need it. Maybe
because they don't trust the audience.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be reminded twice more that this blood is magic. Okay. But it's been established, so if you're paying attention, you don't need this.
And it's J.J. Abrams himself operating the tribble. He's the puppeteer.
Oh, right.
He's under the table.
Okay, we didn't have enough to do that day.
The lens flare had been done earlier. So then we get another cool, big action sequence, the space jump with the visor cracking.
I love it. I love it. I think it's so well directed.
Mm.
Because you get a bit of a cute thing between them where there's a little bit of one-upmanship, like crouching in the same position. This is where Benedict Cumberbatch is good because he doesn't break character and he's being ridiculous, like, I'm going to crouch like this. So Chris Pine gets to be the comedic foil and go, well, fine, if you're going to do it like that. And then before it gets overblown and you're like, this is silly, they just ping out of the door. Mm. I think it's brilliant.
They also done those helmets that I always make a joke about on there, where rather than light out of the helmet, it lights inside the helmet to perfectly light their faces.
You're right.
It's just so funny.
We're just blinding you instantly.
we won't put a torch on your forehead. We'll put blooming lights in your face.
Well, you don't need to be able to see to do what you've got to do.
There's a lot of debris ahead.
Yeah. Well, can you see my face though?
Look at my eyes. Look at my blue eyes.
Why is everybody's eyes so bad? Has he blued everyone's eyes? Everybody's eyes. Not everybody, but the people with blue eyes, they're not normal blue eyes.
Well, Chris Pine doesn't have normal blue eyes.
No, I know he doesn't. Mm. They are piercing.
So this is an interesting bit where Spock gets in touch with our other universe Spock to ask him.
Is it an interesting bit?
It's on paper, it is interesting.
Is it?
Well,
I'm just going to keep saying, is it?
But why do you not think it is?
Well, we had the big Spock moment in the first movie.
Yeah.
So that's been done. So he's on screen here just for a bit of fan service.
Sure.
And to remind them that he can't break the Prime Directive. 3 seconds later, he breaks the Prime Directive. It's a terrible bit of writing. Mm. I don't know what it's there for.
Mm.
He says, I cannot tell you this stuff. I cannot break the timeline. I cannot give you this information. It'll affect your destiny.
But
bang, here's the information.
Yes.
It's a nod and a wink to us,
I guess so.
Acknowledging Wrath of Khan. But I just don't know because it's not what's... But if you agree that they shouldn't have done that at the start of the film, you should be thinking that Spock shouldn't be doing this here.
I mean, I like what they've done. In the sense that, you know,
Then you're a hypocrite.
they ring Spock to ask him if there's any help he can give them on how to beat Khan, which is exactly the same idea in Spaceballs, where they put on Spaceballs the movie to find out what they should do next. And that's why it's brilliant, because of Spaceballs the movie. She's on the vengeance then, is Cal Marcus. Khan's on the vengeance. Admiral Marcus on the vengeance. Kirk's on the vengeance. And Carol Marcus watches Khan crush her dad's skull.
And he breaks her leg.
Yeah, he breaks her leg and then pops his head.
Yeah.
That's when he seems like a baddie. Because
like,
I think he breaks Carol's leg because he's like, he fancies doing it. He stepped over and he's like, oh, hang on. And then snaps her thigh.
I agree. No, but I think this is the moment where it changes. I think you can have sympathy for him until this moment. And actually, he should pop Marcus's head.
Sure.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, she watches her dad have his skull crushed, which I'm reminding you of because it comes in a little bit later. In my opinion, they save the best action till last. The Enterprise hurtling towards Earth is very exciting. Get a replay of the warp core, but this time it's Kirk doing it. Scotty does make a point of going, you can't go in there because of the radiation. You'll be dead before you've even made the climb.
Mm.
Not Kirk. He makes the climb up. Does it and back down because he's brilliant.
And kicks the shit out of some machinery. It's
fucking that bit.
For ages.
That's the most ridiculous bit. You get into this high tech spacecraft and it boils down to fucking boot it.
Yeah.
Boot it. Boo it.
It's always quite satisfying, though.
Jim!
Yeah, physical action. Yeah. Rather, I mean, I think in Wrath of Khan, when Spock puts his hands in, that's quite fun because of the lights. Mm. But just to kick it into place is silly in the whatever century we're in, but it's satisfying.
Mm. So he saved the ship and we get that freaking awesome bit where it plummets through the clouds and then rises back out of the clouds. Goosebumps.
Yeah.
So Spock gets the Khan moment.
Mm.
It's good. It's no Shatner, but it's good. And then he gets to basically Hulk out.
Mm.
He becomes the Incredible Hulk.
He shows emotion.
Yes.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
See, I didn't.
Screaming Khan is a Vulcan showing emotion, which is unexpected. That's the.
Oh no! I got that. What I meant was he goes after him, and this is where it lost. I was a bit action fatigued. Yeah, I missed that. That's a shame that I missed that beat, because all I'm seeing is yet another fight. Where can we have this fight? Let's have it high up. Let's jump on these truck things.
Silly.
And it just felt like more fighting for the sake of it.
Yeah, and it's because you felt like the emotional beat of the ending was the death of Kirk, and so this now you're feeling a bit of fatigue because it's.
I think if I'd realised that he wouldn't normally have done that, it would have made more sense to me, but I don't know.
And they get her involved.
Yeah, she says, well, I like her line when she goes, go get him. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to have a girlfriend who's supportive.
of violence, specifically. Yeah, go kill him. Absolutely.
See you later.
I mean, because they sort of, Uhura and Spock sort of bond over Spock beating a man to death almost.
Yeah, whatever floats your boat.
Exactly, a bit role play. And then Kirk gets brought back to life because of Khan's blood. Mm. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but seemingly now in this new Star Trek universe, anyone who dies can be brought back to life, which is a big
swing. That's a big game changer.
Yeah, because they've got a lot of blood in those crypto chambers.
Yeah, no more death for anyone.
Amazing. Amazing. I think they sort of try and go. It's a special case because Bones goes, oh, you were only almost dead, which sort of works as a funny line, and them going, yeah, it won't work on anyone.
Yeah.
Just don't bring it up again, please. And we get that lovely moment at the end. So Khan's frozen and on the bridge, the captain's walking round and he's going, patting everyone's shoulder, and he gets to Carol Marcus and he says, I'm glad you can be part of the family. And she says, it was a really sort of weird expression. It's good to have a family. She's sort of like, because remember, I watched my dad's skull get crushed.
I think I am reaching, because I want to believe that the writing is better than this. I think the fact that when she sees Marcus, when she's on the bridge of the Enterprise and she's like, let me talk to my father. Like, this only I can save the day. She doesn't say, hello, dad. She says, hello, sir. So I think we're supposed to think that their relationship was quite distant and formal and cold. Mm. And she also says, when I asked to see the weapons, he wouldn't even see me. So it's like, you don't live with each other. You have to make an appointment kind of thing. So we're supposed to think, I think, that they were never that close. And even though you obviously don't want to watch your dad's head get squeezed in by Benedict Cumberbatch.
He might have been having a bad day. He might have come around, woke up the one day and go, God.
But there's a lot in that word,
what was I drinking?
You say,
Jesus, I was in a spaceship and I blew another spaceship up. Fuck me. I need to stay off the Romulan ale.
Oh, I was going to do a Romulan ale joke. Arsehole.
Sorry.
Nah, well done.
So
I'm happy for you.
Thanks. It feels pretty good, I'm not going to lie.
I'm sad for me.
Oh.
I've got a great callback. Well, I'll let him finish.
Thanks.
Never did.
I feel really good. So that's pretty much
that's it.
Shall we talk a bit about Khan and the casting of Benedict Cumberbatch?
I thought we'd done that.
It feels like something we do at the start, but if you want to do it now, that's cool.
What happened to the Klingons? go on, Alex.
Just the character being whitewashed, because obviously, either like with him being a white actor playing what was in the historic Star Trek universe, I think he was a Sikh. Originally, he was introduced as in Starseed, Space Seed, the ruler of Eastern Eurasia. George Takei said, while he thinks Benedict Cumberbatch, who played Sulu in the original series, after watching this, he thought Benedict Cumberbatch was great, but that Gene Roddenberry had always had in the back of his mind, and this was his philosophy, to embrace the diversity of this planet.
Yeah, of course.
I think they could have fixed it, if it is an issue, by when he says he's Khan, I think Kirk should say, how do you spell that? And he should say C-A-A-N, like Jimmy Khan. Have you seen The Godfather?
Yeah.
and then I think we're fine.
I think we might be bet on, yeah, safer ground. And you could say, have you got a forename? No, I haven't. Mm-mm. No, I don't actually.
John. You already knew that.
Bob. Such a shit. All alias name though, isn't it? It's John Harrison.
I mean, it was all part, because there was a minor character in the series called John Harrison. It was all part of these ways of trying to trick the fans.
It's so daft. You just concentrate on making a good film.
Yeah. We're doing Khan. We're doing something new with Khan.
I think
enjoy
people,
it.
I mean, maybe I'm being naive, but I think people would have been excited at that point because
100%.
That creative team.
Ooh, the guy playing Sherlock. Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you like Nicholas Meyer's full review of this
you know what?
Movie?
I've grown to love Nicholas Meyer listening and reading him this week. So, yes, please.
Yes,
it is brilliant. In my sort of artistic worldview, if you're going to do an homage, you have to add something. You have to put another layer on it. And they didn't. Just by putting the same words in different characters' mouths didn't add up to anything. And if you have someone dying in one scene and then sort of being resurrected immediately after, there's no real drama going on. It just becomes a gimmick or gimmicky. And that's what I found it to be, ultimately.
And that's exactly what I said on Monday. He hates resurrection. He doesn't buy into resurrection. Mm. So never make Star Trek Resurrection, Nick.
So I think that is us done.
Lovely.
On Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yep.
Shall we do the bites?
Yes. Yeah.
Best scene, Chris.
I really like the setup and payoff of the suicide bomb in London. It's practically wordless. I think it's really good visual storytelling and it's absolutely devastating. And so surprised myself watching the film this time and picking that, but I just thought it was the best scene.
That's a good choice.
Are you Victoria?
My choice is a bit silly, but I really like it when they ping out the door to go through. It's just really well done. It's just cut at the exact right moment. It's good.
It's good. No, I love that moment as well. Three different ones then. Mine is the Vengeance, the USS Vengeance hunting down the Enterprise in the warp when it comes up behind it and it's making that sound. Goosebumps. Love it. All right, MVW. Vicky.
I found this quite difficult actually. But I'm gonna say Chris Pine. Because
okay.
Yeah, I'm surprised at myself, but
I'm a Chris Pine fan. I just didn't expect you to pick him.
Why?
I don't know. I just didn't feel like the meatiest sort of all the characters to really get your teeth into.
Yeah, I mean, well, the trouble is, I found obviously Cumberbatch has got like the big stuff going on, but I do find it a little bit grating. Yeah, I know, and I hate saying that because he's obviously, you know, superlative and all the rest of it, but I just found it annoying. There we go. So let's think about this. Apart from Zoe Saldana, most other characters, and Simon Pegg got a really tricky relationship with that character again, not his fault. So basically, most other characters are quite serious and quite pale-faced, and even Simon Pegg as Scotty, which in the first one, he's the comic relief, he's cross, basically, for quite a lot of it. Mm. And without Chris Pine doing Kirk the way he does, it's quite a procedural thing. So I like him, but I did find it quite a difficult choice. I think they fucked up his arc, but more on that in a minute.
Okay, Chris.
Something that Vicky said a little bit earlier makes me question my choice here a little bit.
Was it Alice Eve's bra?
No. No, but we aren't too far apart with our choices. My most valuable whatever is Chris Pine's eyes.
Fair enough.
I mean, I just got lost in them.
Sure.
Cool.
I mean, he's blessed.
Yeah.
He's blessed.
I mean, yeah. He's aging well as well. I watched the contract the other day.
Oh, I saw the thing. Is it good?
No. he's good, but no, it's not good. It's weird because you sort of go, oh, it's Chris Pine and Ben Foster who did Hello High Water together. And you're like, well, there's a duo. It's shit. So it's not. It's just not great. Okay, my MVW is Peter Weller.
Mm. Oh, fair enough.
Great choice.
I think he's absolutely brilliant. He's like the bit where he sort of pops up on the video screen. You're like, he's an evil guy.
Yeah,
he's
fair enough.
He's having fun with it. He's like, and it's just the way he goes, ah, well, shit.
I suppose it's because he never looked good.
Him.
Like, he's so craggy and bad. The minute, like, when he's like, also, there's such a power move. When Kirk is going to see him and there's a boardroom full of people and Kirk walks in, he's like, guys, give us a minute. And I'd be like, do we all have to leave? Can you two not go in the corridor? Because there's eight of us. But everyone's like, yeah, well, of course we'll go. So he just always seemed like such a bad dude. But I do think that is a good choice.
Right then, so what would you change in Star Trek Into Darkness, Chris?
What's an unusual eye colour? Orange. I'd give Khan slightly orange eyes.
Okay.
And then at the end of the movie, we look into Kirk's eyes and see his eyes turning slightly orange.
Yeah, because he's his daddy now.
Oh, so, yeah. So I think we should allude to the fact that Kirk has somehow changed because he's got this genetically superior blood in him, and he's either becoming superhuman or is he becoming evil?
Bad. Yeah. Lovely.
I like that a lot.
Thanks.
Nice. Victoria.
So I've said before about Carol, sort that out, that is a mess. But the big thing, and it's difficult to fix, but here we go. So Kirk's arc is, he gets that big speech when Peter Weller is like, I'm going to kill the crew. And he's like, no, spare the crew. This is my thing. You can have me. Spare the crew. And we're meant to go, oh, cool. Okay, you've learned to be responsible. The trouble is, it makes sense for the character, but for the audience, it's not very satisfying because Kirk is hot-headed and he doesn't play by the rules, and that's what we like. So when he's like, I've learned to become responsible, we're like, okay, cool, but it doesn't feel that much for us.
I don't want to have sex with you anymore.
This is the thing. We preferred you the other way. So there needs to be a way for him to learn without being like, spare the crew, because it's a big emotional moment for the characters, but you're like, okay, cool. But we liked you the way you were. So how do you make it work? How do you give him a journey without undoing the sort of the sexy blue-eyed rebel thing?
Mm.
There you go.
I like it. Mine's slightly bigger than yours. Don't make this the story of your Star Trek sequel at all in any way. I think they did an absolutely great job setting up this new franchise with the first movie. We did a lot of stuff on Earth in the first movie. I like what they've done with Earth. And initially I thought, oh, it's cool seeing Earth a little more in this universe. I don't really want it. I want them to be off in deep space. I want them to be on their mission, light years away from home and safety, exploring new worlds. Basically, what they did with Star Trek Beyond, they should have bumped forward by a movie, and that should be this. I want to see them off, like, together, this unit, encountering weird things at the edge of the cosmos. I don't want to see Earth and battles like with warships, like, and like Earth being so prevalent in this movie. I want distance. I want them isolated and it just being about these guys.
So you think they should have bumped forward the film that effectively ended the franchise?
I don't know if it would have ended the franchise had this movie not preceded it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think they needed to get off on their 5-year mission in movie 2 as opposed to in movie 3.
Yeah.
And I just also think it's just an insane decision competing with, or at least referencing, the most beloved Star Trek movie in the history of Star Trek with your second movie, because you're just
not leaning into it fully. Because you can do it. You can say, this is what we're going to do, because you trust us now, audience, because the first one was good.
Mm.
So we'll take the thing that you loved, but we'll do it our way. And isn't that exciting?
Absolutely.
Rather than like this half thing of pretending and
yeah. But also you're just going to invite comparisons, and I don't think that's a wise move. Or if you're going to do it and you're going to have this story, Beastie Boys sabotage over every action sequence.
It's ridiculous.
Brilliant. I'm done.
Oh, shit.
Jesus.
No, wait. No, it's you.
Every week.
It's you. It's your turn to talk.
What?
What?
Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Not you. You're finished speaking.
Yeah.
Then Chris says, are you ready for the verdict? Sting, Blondine, Sting. And then I say, so fuck you both.
Look at Fellini over here. And then we have the Sting.
It's
Blondine,
true.
Make a note, Sting at that point.
Oh, did it change? Oh, I don't know. You had your little private thing on Monday. Maybe this changed without me knowing.
We change it. Do you not? Have you not realised we change it week by week depending on what you do or don't do?
Is that true?
There's no way to win this game. It's the Kobayashi Maru test. Every time it's your movies.
Okay, so I'm asking you to introduce the verdict. Can you introduce the verdict?
No, you say it. You or you, either of you.
I don't say it.
You
this
used
week.
To.
I did.
So now you do it.
You just do the verdict, Vicky.
How do you do it? What do you say?
There is no way to win this.
There's no way to win.
Just say.
Oh, Kobayashi Maru.
Say it's the verdict.
It's the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
Great. Carry on.
Okay, cool. So these were my choices. See, I know that bit. These were my choices this week.
It's just funny every time. It just changes. Whatever you do,
go with the flow.
It's the opposite of that.
Is it really though? Please tell me the truth. Please.
It's fine. Let's just do the verdict.
Fine. There we go. Thank you. So I recognise that. Okay, cool. So these are my choices. So who would I like to go first? Chris.
Okay. I think it's remarkable that Wrath of Khan plays out in one room. Because, you know, that's the same stage redressed to look like two different ships.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And it's, I mean, they never meet these two, the hero and villain. Yeah. They just space-time.
Filmed 4 months apart, each of actor scenes.
The action is less sophisticated in Wrath of Khan. The effects are worse. The fighting's less impressive. But it does nail the emotion, which is what really matters, as a lot of that other stuff is just bells and whistles. So, while Star Trek Into Darkness has the spectacle, Wrath of Khan has the soul, and I'm a soul man, so Wrath of Khan.
That's lovely. And you?
Do you want me to go next?
Yes, that's what I said. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
If you'd listen, yeah. Yep.
Wow. After I helped you out of your little mental hole that you dug yourself, where you're like, what's going on?
You're gaslighting. You're actually gaslighting me.
I am not gaslighting you.
You didn't help me. You were tricking me.
I wasn't. I was the one who said, let's do the verdict. I got you out of the hole.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You're acting like Khan.
Sorry.
A lot of the same reasons Chris said. Basically, Wrath has aged a lot. The SFX weren't great in the first place because of the tiny budget, and they've only got worse over time. A lot of spectacle in Into Darkness. But I will say, like a lot of CGI spectacle, Into Darkness was a lot more rewarding in terms of the action on the big screen. Mm. Because it is all CGI, it doesn't translate as well onto the small screen. Star Trek, Wrath of Khan, got clarity with that story. Into Darkness, cartwheels from scene to scene, making balmy decisions because they're big and they offer spectacle. And it's like, oh my God, but they don't add up to a whole lot. So in the end, I do think it's closer than I anticipated because I liked both these films for very, very different reasons, spectacle versus story. But like Chris, Wrath of Khan.
So we have a winner and logic dictates that winner is the Wrath of Khan. Shall we let Vicky pick one?
Yes, please.
What's your verdict,
Well,
Vicky?
I was actually a bit closer because it just modernised. Like, Wrath of Khan just seems too creaky now. And I was more looking forward to Into Darkness because I knew like you said, the spectacle of it. But just when you, if you try and take nostalgia out of Wrath of Khan, is it a better film actually? Because it just is a bit plodding and I do like a lot of action. However, there's too many plot holes in Into Darkness. That Alice Eve thing, which they make her take her clothes off for no reason, really, really fucks me off. Although there is a moment with Savick in the lift in Wrath of Khan, he's like, have you changed your hair? And it's like, that's inappropriate. You're my captain. My hair is none of your goddamn business.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like for like.
Yeah, it's slightly less.
Slightly less problematic, yes. you're right.
No, it's her underwear.
No,
to
self. Don't mention Vicky's hair.
Wow.
But yeah, but anyway, Wrath of Khan is a classic, so yes, Wrath of Khan.
3 for 3.
Lovely.
Wrath of Khan. So let's quickly look ahead to next week. Alex Zane.
Mm.
Do you want to give Vicky the clue and see if she can guess what the film's
I thought
are?
It was A Hard Day's Night, but that doesn't seem like something you would choose.
Oh, good.
Because you said Fab Four, didn't you? Or
no.
Something?
Oh, closer. I said, check out this amazing quartet.
Okay.
And you just said Fab Four, which is
What's an amazing quartet?
Another way
oh, the Fantastic Four.
Good clue, Alex.
Oi, oi, oi. Well done. Yes, it is. The Fantastic Four, directed by Tim Story from 2011. Mm-hmm. And The Fantastic Four, directed by Josh Trank from 2015. Uh-huh. So those are the two movies we're going to be doing.
And where are they available, Alex?
If
you Google, you'll find out.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four, the Tim Story version, is available on... whereas the Josh Trank version is available on...
Lovely. Thanks for your help, Alex. So that's it, Fantastic Four versus Fantastic Four, making Fantastic Eight next week. And that's it. As ever, check out at ClashPod on Twitter and Instagram. There's fun stuff happening there. There might be a picture of a snake and a weasel. And we need some rabbit pictures sooner or later, Vicky. We've promised them.
Oh, yeah. I've got one. Sorry, I keep forgetting.
Do give us some kind of love wherever you get your podcasts. Live long and prosper.
Thanks,
and we'll be back next week with the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic!
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.